Wednesday evening at sunset, we commence the eight-day celebration of Sukkah. And so I wanted to devote the third hour today to continuing our discussion of Sukkah. Yesterday, we concluded our program on Kara, which means an invitation to be called out and to meet, to read and to recite. The actual name of the book that has been corrupted in your English Bibles, a book named after the Egyptian sun god, is Biblia, to Leviticus. So in Kara 23:36, Yahweh, after inviting us to participate in the first 7 days of Sukkah, calling it a chag, a festival feast, and a set-apart time to enjoy our relationship, naming it the event Sukkah, which means to camp out. He says, on the eighth day, there exists a set-apart invitation to meet, a mikra, on your behalf, and you should answer and respond to the summons, presenting yourself and appearing before Karab, the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates, the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light, to approach Yahweh. So the request or invitation, depending on how you'd like to phrase it, of the creator of the universe, God, is that on Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations, and on this chag of Sukkah, that we are being invited, being encouraged, being requested to appear before the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light. The only feminine manifestation of Yahweh is the set-apart spirit, the Ruach Kodesh. Ruach is a feminine noun. All of the attributes and missions of the set-apart spirit are maternal. She is the reason that we are born anew spiritually into Yahweh's family. She is the source of our enrichment and empowerment on Shavuah. She is the means to accomplish perfection, where we are adorned in a garment of light so we appear perfect in Yahweh's eyes. And so it is interesting that religious Jews, rabbinical types, have managed to twist Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations, as a time to afflict oneself, when the verbiage is, the invitation is identical, that in both cases we're being asked to respond to an invitation and to appear before the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light. The invitation, the request, is identical on both days. And yet this day, Sukkah, the celebration of Sukkah, is specifically called a chag. So the instruction is identical, and we find that this mikra is called a chag, a celebration, a party, a festival feast. So if the instruction is the exact same, and Sukkah is called a celebration, a chag, a festival feast, then it's for darn sure that Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations, can't be an onerous, debilitating, self-sacrificing fast. Because, as I say, the instruction is the same. And here God goes out of his way to say, this is a chag, a festival feast. Now, there is a difference in this, in that in the spring, with the celebration of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, collectively, the celebration of unyeasted bread, which includes Pesach, Passover, and Bukurim, is a seven-day celebration of our relationship with Yahweh. Here, we also have a seven-day celebration with Sukkah. But on top of that, we're also asked as a separate invitation, a separate mikra, a separate time to be called out to celebrate an eighth day of Sukkah. And it's not, therefore, that Sukkah is 8 days. That's not the way that Yahweh was presenting this. What he's saying here is that Sukkah, the celebration of camping out, this party, this festival feast, is 7 days. And then he's inviting us to an eighth day. Now, why is that important? Why distinguish between the 7 days and the eighth day? You may be wondering. Why not just say it's an eighth-day celebration and dispense with this sentence altogether? Well, he tells us the first 7 days is a mikra, that it is set apart, that it is a festival feast, that it's a time to camp out together. And it is. It's a celebration of life here on earth. It's a celebration of the relationship here on earth. It's a celebration of what's important to Yahweh here on earth. It's a celebration of his plan. Yahweh's plan is six, the number of man created on the sixth day, plus God, one, equals seven. Creation took place on a 6+1 basis. The Shabbat is a 6+1 plan. These mikrei are six steps that lead to camping out with God, plus the destination, which is Sukkah. It's all based on 6+1. If you look at the creation account too, it's not just that in 6 days, and the 6 days when equated to our time here on earth is about 14 billion years. And if you take the 14 billion years from our time clock and divide it by the residual radiation from the Big Bang, where time is stretched to 10 to the 12th power, you do the math and you find out that 6 24-hour Earth days, from the perspective of someone at creation, the Creator, is exactly 6 days, or from Earth time, 14 billion years, and that using relativity, that time are absolutely equivalent. But in this realization, the creation account isn't just about the fact that Yahweh created the earth in 6 24-hour earth days from his perspective at creation, 14 billion years from ours here on earth. It's that human history is going to play out over that same period. And he tells us that on the fourth day, for example, which would be year 4000 Yah, that the greater light is going to be made visible via the Moed. The Mikre are Moed, their meetings with God. And it is that time that Yahweh, in diminished form, came to earth to camp out with us, to fulfill his promises, and he enabled the promises associated with the first four Mikre in year 4000 Yah. Well, now we're approaching year 6000 Yah. That's going to be 2033 on our Roman Catholic, Roman Empire calendars. So as I speak to you in 2014, we are 19 years away from year 6000 Yah, when Yah was going to appear on Yom Kippurim and is going to camp out with us for 1,000 years, from year 6000 to 7000 Yah, beginning on Sukkah, which of course is a natural Shabbat in 2033, year 6000 Yah. Only 19 years away from this event playing out in history. Now, well, Scott and I, and many of the participants and listeners to this program, will be here for that glorious time. We will not be here for the 7 years that preceded. Sometime, most likely in 2026, on Teruah, we will be taken away from this planet. And we're going to get a chance to explore the existing universe. So I want to get back to the 7 days of Sukkah and then a Mikra associated with the eighth day. Everything that God has to say plays out over the plan of seven. That's why there's 7 days associated with matzah in the spring. And in the seventh month, there are 7 days associated with Sukkah, camping out with God as the destination in this seventh month. So now if you realize that everything is part of this formula of seven, including human history, that the history of man outside of the garden and then returning to the garden is going to be 7,000 years. We're just concluding within 19 years of concluding the first 6,000 years of human toil. And then we will start a celebration of the Shabbat of the 7,000th year, the 7th millennia of human history, camping out with God on this earth. That represents the 7 days of the festival feast of Sukkah. But that's not the end of the plan. That's not the end of time. That's not the end of us camping out with God. It just happens to be the end of the plan of salvation. It's the end of the history of man on this planet, humankind on this planet. There's a wholly separate invitation to meet. That's the 8th day of Sukkah, because Yahweh has told us that once he has finished camping out with us for this 1,000 years, he's going to destroy the heavens and the earth. And he's going to create a new one. And the 8th day of Sukkah, just as 8 has always represented infinity, is a new beginning without an end. In fact, it's a period where time is no longer something that we can be stuck in. It's a period where everyone is liberated in time, able to maneuver in time. And that tells you why Yahweh actually has to create a new heaven and earth. You see, so long as this heaven and earth exist, and so long as we are liberated in time and empowered to live with Yahweh on an ongoing basis, that means that we could actually go back in time. Because as a spiritual being, as an energy-based being without physical bodies, we're no longer constrained by time. We can go back in time. And nothing would then preclude us from going back in time and actually examining our worst behavior. The worst behavior of humankind, as well as our own faults. And yet, those faults and that behavior will be unknown going forward. So there has to be a universe to explore without sorrow. This 8th day is really important. It's a separate event. And it's a separate event because all of human history, Yahweh's plan of salvation and reconciliation, our existence in the Garden of Eden, expelled from Eden and back into the Garden of Eden, all takes place over 7,000 years. So we're going to celebrate 1,000 years of camping out with Yahweh. That's what the 7 days of the Mikra, the invitation to be called out and meet of Sukkah, which is a festival feast, a celebration, represents. But that's not the end of our relationship with God. It's not the end of our opportunity to examine the universe. Because after that 1,000 years is over, then Yahweh creates a brand new universe with us this time as witnesses. Then we get to explore it forever. It's a whole universe to explore. And as I've said, God has to do it that way. There's no other option. If he doesn't create a new universe, then we cannot go back in time. And if we can't go back in time, then we are limited in time. And we're not truly spiritual. We lose a huge aspect of free will. But if we can go back in time in the existing universe, then we would be able to witness man's inhumanity. The horrid nature of the time prior to the flood. The horrid nature of the birth of Christianity and the Roman Empire and its viciousness against Israel. And we'd be able to witness the rise of Islam and its barbaric, murderous nature. We'd be able to witness the rise of Hitler and Mao and Stalin. And hundreds of millions of people dying. we'd be able to witness the days that are approaching us, where billions are going to die. And even more painful for some of us, we'd be able to witness our own faults. And so God wants us to be free to explore. But he doesn't want us to be saddened. And so he has to create a new universe. But more important than just having to create a new universe, he wants to create a new universe. Why? Because when he created the last universe, it was for the sole purpose of being able to engage in a relationship with an aspect of his creation. To enjoy his creation with his creation. But there were no witnesses. He alone. Now, can you imagine taking those who in that universe chose to get to know him, came to like him, came to examine and care about and find appeal in his means to engage in a relationship, chose to engage in that relationship and celebrated that relationship. Now with his children, those he's adopted into the covenant, he's now in a position to have them be witnesses at the next creation. I mean, what could be more fun for our Heavenly Father than that? He's going to have a new universe and going to create a new universe with those children who have elected to participate in his covenant family there at his sides as witnesses. We might even be able to have requests. You know, there might be some cute little feminine spirit that might want a unicorn. There may be somebody there that just loves rainbows. There may be somebody there that says, you know, the platypus was a good start, but what if we were to add feathers to the old platypus and maybe wings?
Combine a rhino and an ostrich or something.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a request. Ideas, a ballot box for good ideas. If nothing else, then a oohing and aahing. You know, you see a great play and or something that's spectacular, and you ooh and aah. Even if we're just in the grandstands, oohing and aahing. Or there's an explanation of the calculation that went in to this transition from energy to matter. We're going to be witnesses. That's something our Heavenly Father wants to do. And there are so many other indications of this. One, of course, is that the only book in the so-called Christian New Testament that I view as credible is that of the disciple Matanyah. It was originally written in Hebrew. And it is an eyewitness account, and it is focused on Yosha's words and his actions. And in it, Yosha specifically says that the Torah, as it exists, every jot and tittle, every aspect of the Torah is going to remain intact while the universe exists. The other interesting insight in terms of the eighth day of creation, when we're witnesses to a new universe, one created in our presence, is that not only do we get to enjoy the whole creative process and are witnessed to the whole creative process and probably get to make suggestions as to what we'd like to see. And so flying brontosauruses will be high on the list. And, of course, you want to be able to talk to the animals and have them talk back. But one of the things that is really telling is that once we reach the point where all decisions have been made, where every human soul has had the opportunity to either choose to accept Yahweh and his covenant or reject Yahweh and his covenant, and we reach that point where all decisions have been made. So we've all been given the opportunity to exercise free will. Yahweh says at that point that he is going to restore and renew his covenant with Yisrael and with Yehuda in a manner that is different than exists now. And the manner that's different is that his Torah is the means now for us to know him and to engage in a relationship with him. But in this celebration of life and of the renewal of the covenant, the Torah is literally going to be placed inside of us. So now our response to the Torah determines our fate. We reject the Torah as Christians and Muslims and most rabbinic Jews do in favor of their Talmud. If you reject the Torah, as almost all socialist secular humanists do and academicians do, then you're rejecting God, you're rejecting the covenant. So that's the means to disassociate from God, is to reject the Torah. But in eternity, once everyone that survives will have chosen to accept the Torah, will have chosen to observe the Torah, will use the Torah for the purpose it was conceived, which is to guide us into the covenant with Yahweh, then all of God's children at that point are going to want to have the Torah integrated into their lives, and Yahweh is going to accommodate. He's then going to write the Torah inside of us. At that point, there's no way to reject the Torah. But no one at that point wants to reject the Torah. We want total inclusion of the Torah. We want to understand it perfectly and completely. We want it to guide our every step. Now, for 1,000 years, while we're celebrating the conditions of the Garden of Eden here on Earth, I suspect that the Torah that is going to be integrated into us is the existing Torah. So we're just going to understand everything that God said so much better, more completely, more accurately. But in eternity, the existing Torah isn't a useful document. And it's not useful because its principal purpose is to provide guidance and instructions to know Yahweh. We'll all know him. To engage in a relationship with Yahweh, will already be part of his family. To celebrate the path from the religious and political and military world into his perfect home, but will already be there. And the existing Torah provides us with the consequence of either choice, including the consequence of rebelling against God and being estranged from him. There's none of that that's going to have any merit once everyone that survives is already part of the covenant family, knows Yahweh intimately, has already been perfected, empowered, and enriched. But that is not to say that we won't need and want guidance. We will. I mean, once we are eternal and able to maneuver in time, once we are energy-based and enormously more powerful, we're going to want an owner's manual, a set of instructions that tells us how to maximize the enjoyment of our greatly empowered and liberated condition without doing any harm to ourselves or others. It's going to be really important at that point to have guidance. And so Yahweh incorporating his Torah guidance, his Torah teaching, his Torah instructions and directions into the very fabric of our lives at that point is absolutely essential. And he can do it then, but can't do it now. Because if he were to do it now, there'd be no free will. There'd be no way to reject the Torah. But he can do it then because at that point, we've all accepted the Torah. We all know him. We're all engaged in a relationship with him. We're all part of his family. And so that's why Yosha specifically said in the 5th chapter of Matanyah that every jot and tittle, the jot is the yod, the first letter in Yahweh's name, the smallest of the Hebrew letters. And the tittles are the strokes that comprise the rest of the Hebrew alphabet. So it's the smallest components of the letters that comprise the words, which comprise the sentences, which comprise the Torah, that all of them will continue to be in full effect until there is no more heaven and earth, until everything in it has come to pass. And we have not yet had the fulfillment of Teruah, of Kippurim, of Sukkah. We haven't had the fulfillment of the seventh day, and much less the eighth day of Sukkah. And since Yahweh's Torah teaching is also found in his prophets, there's much of what is written in the prophets that has still to take place, including the Magog War that we were talking about, Armageddon that we were talking about, the onslaught of the tribulation, and Yahweh's return, turning the earth back into conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden. So all of that is still going to take place. So the existing Torah, which you have the opportunity to accept or reject, is still available for your scrutiny, for your observation, or your ignorance, to push away from it, to disassociate from it, to reject it. So that's why this is presented as 7 days, and then an invitation to be called out for an eighth day, for all eternity, celebrating being enlightened and approaching Yahweh for all time. So following this, and as an extension of it, we read, her joyous assembly of people, the Asharah, the participants in the festive celebration, these partygoers who are participating in Sukkah, they do not engage in any of the work of the heavenly messenger, the Malacha. Malacha is the feminine of Malach. And when you add the hey, which means to observe, to pay attention, to the end of a word, the word becomes feminine. Malach is the Hebrew word for spiritual messenger, heavenly messenger. The most important Malach was Yahusha in the terms of the fulfillment of these mikra. But in terms of our lives, Yahusha even said, I need to go back to the Father so that you can have the counselor. That's the set-apart spirit. And she is the feminine manifestation of heaven's message. She is the representative, the envoy, the feminine envoy of Yahweh. She is pure spirit. Therefore, the spiritual representative of Yahweh. And feminine with the ah at the end of Malach. And so, we're not to do her work. We can't do her work. We can't adorn people in the garment of light. We can't empower them. We can't enrich them. We, not from a covenant point of view, not from an eternal point of view. And so, we celebrate this party. We're the beneficiaries of this party. We don't pay for the party. We don't produce the party. And that's what God is saying here. He goes on to say that these godly and specific Elah appointed and designated meeting times, moed, assemblies set by the authority for a particular purpose of Yahweh, and we will continue. He just says that now these are. So he is announcing a summation here. He has presented the seven mikra. He is concluding. He began them by talking about the mikre being moed, meetings with God. And he's concluded by saying that these are godly and appointed specific meeting times with Yahweh. They're of Yahweh, with Yahweh, together in association with Yahweh. But they are moed. Just as he told us in the fourth day of creation, where he said the greater light will become visible on the fourth day, year 4000 Yah, as a sign of the moed, of these specific meeting times. So these godly and specific appointed and designated meeting times, the moed of Yahweh, which relationally and beneficially, Asher, you are invited to attend. You are encouraged to read and recite, to meet and to be welcomed. Accordingly, as set apart Kodesh, separating and cleansing Mikre, are for the purpose of coming near and approaching the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light, the adoptive mother who enlightens and elevates unto Yahweh. They are a gift which elevates, a reconciling sacrifice, and also a pouring out of the word, a day for his day. What a wonderful summation of these seven mikre, and particularly of the intent. So God is saying of these moed mikre, of these invitations to meet, to be called out, to read and recite, to celebrate this relationship, to be welcomed into the very company and home of God, that these godly and specific appointed and designated meeting times, the moed, of Yahweh, relationally, beneficially, are invitations for you to attend. Kara. He's defining Mikra for us to be summoned, to be called out, to meet, to read, to recite. The seven Mikra, collectively, are godly and specific, appointed and designated meeting times. That's what they represent. They're of Yahweh. They're associated with him. They're offered by him. They're proposed by him. The feasts are funded by him. They're arranged by him. Every aspect of the benefits of attending these parties are provided by him. They are relational. They are beneficial. And we all have, Kara, been invited to attend. They are set apart mikre. Mikre, based on this verb kara, which means to invite, to summon, to call out, to meet, to read, to recite. They're special days, set apart days, for the purpose of coming near and approaching karab, of answering the summons, and presenting oneself before the Isha, the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light, the adoptive mother who enlightens and elevates, the set-apart spirit, unto Yahweh. You see, these days, according to this testimony, are minka. They're a gift. Something being offered without compensation by Yahweh for the purpose of elevating, raising us up, making us acceptable. It's a reconciling sacrifice. It's a pouring out of the word. A nekek dabar. It's an immersion in the word. Yeah, there is no baptism in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. But there's something much better. A nekek dabar. An immersion in the word. When you're immersed in the word of Yahweh, you realize that God has provided an invitation to meet with him. That he has provided a summons calling you out of the world of human misadventures into his home. That he has guidance that he has provided for our benefits so that we could come to know him, engage in a relationship with him, be adopted by him, be perfected and become immortal by him, being enriched and empowered. His gifts of these special days elevate us. They reconcile us. And it's a pouring out and immersion in the word. I don't know what God could say in this regard that would be any more clear as to what these days represent, what the purpose of these days are, to immerse us in the word. That's why kara means to read and recite. To reconcile us via a sacrifice that he himself has made. To offer us these things as gifts without compensation on our behalf. A chance for us to come into the presence of Yahweh's light. To bathe ourselves in his perfection. And all he's asking is that we acknowledge that these days have been appointed by him, that they're designated meeting times with Yahweh, that they're relational, beneficial, and that we're invited on these days to treat them as Kodesh, as set apart, as special days, to read and recite his testimony, to be immersed in his word, to be welcomed into his company, to approach him. And yet, so few people take advantage of it. You know, tomorrow at sunset will be the commencement of this 7+1 day celebration of life, of camping out with the creator of the universe. God has thrown a party, and yet only 1 in 1,000,000 people will attend. There is no better host. There is no better guide. There's no more loving father. And he has invited you into his family to attend these great celebrations with him, to explore all of life and creation together, not just in this present universe, but in the new one that he will create. It's all such a marvelous gift, such a celebratory event, a series of festival feasts where we get to celebrate our relationship with the very Creator God of the universe. He's inviting you to attend. Are you going to respond?